Welcome to another edition of the Cyclone Fanatic Podcast. It is episode 14 of Football and Random Things presented by Iowa Diamond. Jeff Woody is back from vacation. I don't know if you heard, but Jay and I did a two-hour podcast last week.
I actually talked to Jay, and he said it was much more and less art.
Yeah, we talked about a lot of football. Lots of football. 2 hours worth of football.
And Jay can go on about it.
Yeah, we probably could have done, I told him, I was like, we talked about half the things that I thought we could talk about today, and we still talked for 2 hours.
He's very smart.
He is very smart, and he likes to talk.
Wait, an attorney likes to talk?
Well, that's fair.
Weird. Yeah.
But it was funny because every time that we would get on a topic, he would bring something else up, like in the middle of a two-minute answer. So then I've got to sit there and think, you know,
remember
about that one thing.
Remember the question
for the entire
remember the question. And
yeah, it's like what you'll do sometimes, and then I'll think of a thing, but then you'll go on like your diatribe won't end for like another 2 minutes, and then by that time, like that one thing is
that question is long gone.
Yeah.
I tend to talk a while, and I'm much more art, much less.
What are we even going to talk about today?
I don't know. We didn't talk about bowl games.
We didn't talk about bowl games.
We didn't even talk about Drake.
Oh, God. We only talked about that for like 10 minutes last week because I didn't want to talk about it. I was just like, let's just forget that this happened.
Just light burn the tape.
Yeah.
Got out mostly unscathed.
Yeah. Mostly. Hopefully. Yeah. All right. We're going to get a quick message from Iowa Diamond, and then we will probably talk about something when we come back on Football and Random Things, presented by Iowa Diamond.
This is Iowa Diamond President Chuck Kuba. After 20 years of serving engagement and wedding couples, I can't help but reflect back on the thousands of wonderful folks we've helped and ask myself, how can we be so lucky? Is it our incredible ring selection or the quiet private atmosphere? Then came the epiphany. Out of all the people in the world, we make you feel like you are the most important people in the world. Because at that moment, to all of us at Iowa Diamond, you are. Visit us at iowadiamond.com or in person anytime. You'll see what I mean.
Welcome back to Football and Random Things. Where do you want to start? You want to talk about Iowa State and what? Washington State? Wazoo?
Washington State.
Washington State. There we go.
Washington State. This has got to be... I love Matt Campbell, but he's pretty vanilla in interviews.
Uh-huh.
Mike Leach is not.
Mike Leach is very much not.
Like, this has to be the biggest dichotomy of... by the book, straight-laced answers, and not even in a book answers between two coaches.
Well, except for the book that he wrote.
That's true. He did write a book.
What is it? Something about the sword? Something about a sword. Yeah.
But he is a fun dude to listen to talk.
Yeah.
I loved his diatribe on the playoffs. He went level by level all the way through.
High school, even.
Yeah.
Like, talking about high school.
From high school to the NFL, level by level, about the playoffs and how stupid it is that he thinks that there's four teams.
Yeah. I do think that it's funny that Division I college football, not even Division I college football, FBS college football remains the only NCAA sanctioned sport that does not have a national champion crowned by the NCAA. The only one.
And it's the one that makes all the money.
And it's the one that makes all of the money. Yes, exactly. It's the only one that you will not see conclude with one team holding up a wooden trophy that says NCAA on it.
Well, who is it? What's it sponsored by then? Or what's it? What's it overseen by? If it's not the NCAA,
it's overseen by the College Football Playoff Trust or whatever it is.
Oh, really?
And then it used to be the Bowl Trust or like some sort of Bowl Alliance. Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah.
I didn't even know that.
It is. That is what it is. It is not sanctioned by the NCAA. That's why you hear like the National Championship Trophy is called the Dr. Pepper National Championship Trophy or whatever it is. Yeah. And then it used to be the Sears Trophy and just the old crystal ball. And it's like, yeah, you're not going to win the NCAA championship.
Who'd have thunk it? It's a fun fact that I didn't even know about.
Yeah.
But that's going to stay rattling up around in this brain for a while.
Right, exactly. Now you're going to be wondering, why is that the way that it is?
Well, it's because money.
Money.
That's why money is the way
that is the worst.
But hey, we're all amateurs, so we don't need to open that can of worms.
Jeff, how many times did you get out from practice and you found a envelope with $100 in it?
Very few times.
Like zero?
Like somewhere between zero and zero. Yeah.
They weren't paying you?
No, they were not. They were not paying me. I paid my tuition, which I appreciate. I do appreciate that. But they did not pay me directly.
Yeah. I wonder how many times Tua Tagovailoa has found some some Benjamins in his
$100 handshake
in his locker. Yeah.
This is a very dark path that we can go down, and I don't want to do that today. I do not want to open that can of worms because we will not come out of that can of worms. It's going to stay down there for a while. So what do you know about Washington State?
I know that Gardner Minshew is a very good quarterback.
It's a neat mustache.
He has a very, yes, glorious mustache. I don't want to interview him because I know all I'll be able to think about is that mustache.
Just stare down at his lip.
Yeah. I feel like it won't be the first time, though.
Well, I think from a Washington State perspective, I don't know a ton about them. I watched, I think, two or three games this year because they all start at 9 p.m.
Yeah, they are they're a mainstay on Pac-12 After Dark.
Yep. Which is fine if you live in Washington. It's a good time slot.
Mm-hmm. But not a whole lot to do in Pullman.
Not a whole lot to do in Pullman. But I think from my understanding, it is one of the most Big 12-y teams that is in the Pac-12. Mm-hmm. So as far as a matchup is concerned, it's about as good as it could have gotten for Iowa State. Excuse me, for Iowa State in the Alamo Bowl, because you're drawing Pac-12 number one. And that is that could have been Utah, which I think would have been a pretty bad matchup for Iowa State because they play punch you in the face football, mm-hmm. which as we've seen over the past, you know, X weeks has not been good for Iowa State for whatever reason.
Right.
The defense has stopped being as physically imposing as they were in the start of the season. So I think it's as good of a matchup from a scheme standpoint for Iowa State as they could have gotten.
Yeah. The thing that's weird about Washington State compared to the other Big 12 teams that run that similar style is they don't have any, I mean, there's a lot less of the throw the ball down the field stuff. They do a lot of Gardner Minshew takes the snap and throws the ball as fast as he can.
Mm-hmm. Like, which is Mike Leach.
Yeah.
That's the offense that was pioneered by Mike Leach. It is the dink and dunk all the way down the field.
Mm-hmm.
And can you pull up his statistics? I want to see how many passing attempts he had, because that kind of
put my glasses back on. Ugh, I can't see.
Such a pain in the ass.
I know.
Because the way that Leach, and so Leach is a very smart dude. So like, as much as he seems to be just a goofy nut, he is actually a very smart person.
Oh, he's a genius.
And the way that he basically crafted that offense is, there is space and defenders, or space and matchups in every defense that's out there. And if you spread them wide enough, that space becomes bigger and the matchups become more one-on-one.
Mm-hmm.
And then you let the quarterback, who also needs to be smart and quick with getting the ball out, you let him make the assessment of what the defense is doing, where the space is, and what's your best matchup. All right. Then their offense is mostly predicated on finding the best little niche that you can carve out 4 yards.
Mm-hmm. All right. You want to know how many
yes.
passing attempts Gardner Minshew has?
Yes.
613
over the course of 13 games. That is 47 a game.
Well, they played 12 games because they didn't play in the Pac-12 championship game.
Oh, right. So that's, he's over 50.
Yeah.
So 50 pass attempts a game. So that is the true Mike Leach, Texas Tech style offense.
I can tell you how many times they ran the ball total.
Less than that.
A lot less than that, yeah. Their leader had 119 attempts. Next was 67. Minshew ran it 52 times himself.
So they're in the 200 range.
Yeah, about
200. So it's about 3-1 pass to run.
Correct. Yep. They average 52 pass attempts a game, and they average 21 rushing attempts a game.
Yeah, so about 3-1. And again, the way that they do that is they spread you out as far as they can spread you out. find the matchup that allows them to get the easiest space that they can. And they're going to run a lot of simple little routes and just trust that the quarterback isn't going to make stupid decisions.
Yeah.
Which is kind of like the passing version of Kansas State. And it sounds weird to correlate Kansas State and Texas Tech, but an offense like this is not very capable of very big plays. It's not a team like Oklahoma is obviously kind of the cornerstone example of offense in college football for 5 years now.
Mm-hmm.
And the Oklahoma offense is based on being able to body blow you. And then eventually once you're tired, then take shots over the top. This one doesn't do that. This offense isn't meant to do that. It's meant to be body blow, body blow, body blow all the way down the field until you get so pissed off that you miss a tackle and then they run.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where their bigger plays are probably going to come from. It's probably less actual down the field passing attempts to actually produce successful big plays.
Well, and that's why, I mean, 38.3 points per game is obviously good.
Mm-hmm.
But for someone that passes that much,
for 60-some pass attempts.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. You would expect them to score more points than that, probably. Mm-hmm. But that's just that they're not trying to put up a bunch of points. And they play pretty good defense, too.
Mm-hmm. So they
Tracy Clays is their defensive coordinator.
Like I said, it's the passing version of Kansas State.
Yeah.
Where you see a play, and a lot of times passing plays, you're disappointed, you know, it's set a 7-yard pass play. You're like, "All right, I can deal with that." A 3-yard pass play, you go, "That was kind of stupid. Why do we even do that?" Washington State's cool with that.
Yeah.
Is they see a 3-4-yard pass play. It's an out route that gets tackled immediately. It's 3rd and 7 now. Cool. They're 2nd and 7 now. 2nd and 6. It's exactly what they're looking for. Because it's just the 3 yards in a cloud of dust, but that dust is farther away from where the ball is.
Right.
It's the, like I said, it's a passing equivalent of Kansas State. It just gives them a better opportunity if you are in 3rd and 9. That they can get 9 to 12 to 15 yards. It's still within the capacity of having a good quarterback and receivers that can catch. Whereas Kansas State, a lot of times you get them 3rd and 9, it has to take, you know, scrambling around, then busting a play and then eventually getting it down the field.
Right.
It's not really it gets them off schedule. So it's a very flexible offense that allows for a lot of down and distance situations. However,
it's just like anybody who watched Army Navy on Saturday,
mm-hmm.
when Army's offense was really good, they're getting 3 yards, 4 yards on first down. They're getting 3 yards, 4 yards on second down. And then you've got 3rd and 2, you know? Mm-hmm. But when Navy was playing really well, their defense was playing well, they're stacking them up on first down and they're gaining 0 yards or losing yards. And that's what, I mean, they lead the nation in fewest plays for negative yardage. And that's because when they get into those situations, the offense is basically, I mean, it can't be ran.
You're talking about Washington State?
No, I'm talking about Army. I'm just saying, it's that same. But Washington State, with the pass component, is eliminated a little bit, you know?
But it's a similar idea.
Yeah, it's a similar idea, but it's just like with those run teams, Kansas State, Army, that offense, when you run that way, it's like, okay, now we've got 3rd and 9. What the hell are we going to do? Our quarterback has thrown 12 passes this season.
It's much more effective than that as far as being flexible in and out of down and distance situations. But however, and this is the other thing that Leach is, and I'm basing a lot of this, full disclosure, like I said, I've watched on TV at 9:30 at night on a Saturday that I've probably fallen asleep at halftime. I watched 3 or 4 of their games. So I can't say this with 100% certainty, but basing the trajectory off of Leach and the guys that have been coordinating, that have coordinated for him, that are now coaches or played for him, that are now coaches across, the way that they set their offense and protections is they're essentially trying to stymie the initial rush.
Yeah.
And if you can stymie the initial rush, you're good. You're golden.
Because the ball's out.
The ball's
already
gone.
Yeah.
And you don't have to worry about sitting and contacting and playing there playing back in pass protection for a 5-7 step drop. You're just going to, someone rushes you right away, you stonewall them. So it's a really aggressive pass set. It's not a, tackles are generally taught a couple different techniques. There's, as far as pass protection is concerned, there is a quick game technique and there is a drop back technique. And a quick game technique is you're going to take 1, maybe 2 kick steps, which is, you know, you back up if you say you're the left tackle, your left foot goes back, your right foot catches up. Your left foot goes back, your right foot catches up, and you hunker down right there, and that's where you punch. You just get a little bit of depth, allow the defender space to tell you what he's doing, but not enough space to actually create a move. So you can figure out where he's going, and then you punch right away. Whereas drop back steps are you're going to take two or three or four kick steps.
Yeah.
And if that defensive end is rushing up the field, then you can invite him to run up the field farther, or then you sit down and hunker down. So the kick steps and the kick slides, that it's two different techniques. It's a timing thing that's different. And Washington State, generally speaking, is going to be very good at short game kick steps. Their protection is going to be based off of how effectively can I stop your initial rush? And that initial rush is the one where, you know, you watch Aaron Donald, Khalil Mack, the guys that are like as good as they are, the best pass rushers in the NFL, their initial rush works. It's the ones where the defender takes three steps and the tackle has no chance. They take three steps and then all of a sudden they're like, shit, I'm on my heels.
Yeah.
Where the guys that are, I don't mean this in a negative term because they're still playing the NFL, the guys that are in the like a TJ Watt. Like TJ Watt gets a lot of his sacks on a second rush where he makes a decent move and is good enough at getting the first rush, but the offensive lineman can generally stop that first rush. But after that, then you have that, okay, I've been stopped. What's my next option? What's my follow-up move? And that's where guys like I said, TJ Watt is really good. So Washington State kind of makes their living off of that first rush. It's that you're going to make your first move and we're going to stop that first move. And then the ball's going to be gone. So you don't even have a second move.
And that's why Gardner Minshew's only been sacked 11 times.
Right. On the entire season.
And he's attempted almost 650 passes.
Because they're good at pass protecting. Like I said, they're very good at stopping that initial rush. He's also very good at getting the ball out. And so if you at some point come to a standstill, ball's gone, there's no chance. You're never going to get to the quarterback. So he's not going to hold on to the ball long. So how do you stop this defense? Or how do you stop this offense then? Is you've got to know what the quarterback is thinking as a defensive player. So this comes in a lot of preparation because it's not a very complex route tree. It's not, I guess, a very complex offense. And this is why the Knott and Klein years, we were always really good against Texas Tech because when they were there, they ran a similar, it's a similar offense. It wasn't Leach when we were there, but it's a very similar style offense. And so Jake and AJ, it was Tuberville.
I was going to say that was the Tuberville era, right? Era. Yeah, yeah.
But Jake and AJ knew where the ball was going. And so they could, it's sort of, you know, sort of like duping somebody into a passing lane in basketball. And then you come out with a fast break because you know where the point guard wants to go. You go, they like to, you know, entry pass to this forward on the left block. They love to do that all the time. I know they love to do that all the time. I'm going to make it look like that's open. They lob that pass in there. You tip it out. There's a fast break's gone. And so the way that a defensive team can do this is one, know where everything's going. Read the quarterback's mind. Like I said, he's reading space and matchups. So if you look at space and matchups, where is their thinking the best matchup is? They have their tight end on a safety. Okay. Mm-hmm. They like, say theoretically, I don't know if that's the case. Like I said, I haven't paid attention to him enough. They say theoretically they like that matchup. You know they like that matchup. That means that you're thinking the quarterback is going to be looking in this direction on a second and seven. They like to go to this matchup. Okay, I'm not going to cut this off because I want them to do that. Then once they do that, then you capitalize on the mistake. And a guy like Willie Harvey is going to be really good at that because he's a very smart football player. The freshman kids and the underclassmen, I think Marcel Spears should be pretty good in this role too. But I think the middle linebackers, the puppies, are going to have a lot of studying to do because it's really incumbent upon upon those guys. But stopping idea, best case number one is obviously you just have to play good coverage.
Right.
You're not going to stop them from completing passes. You have to play good coverage and tackle it when it's there. But in addition to just base fundamentals is, like I said, understanding what the quarterback wants and not immediately cutting off the thing that he wants. Because you want, again, I know that you know that I know that you know that you know that I know. Like that kind of thing. Where I know you like this tight end matchup. I'm going to let you think that I don't know that you like this matchup. And then undercut that. And then that puts you in, say you just bat it down. Or even just it's a contested pass. or he ends up having to come off of it. And so his immediate read is 1,000, 1,002, throw it. Oh, shoot, not a good look. 1,003, 1,004, go to my second look. That's when you start getting in that first rush is done, but the second rush can actually come. So mm-hmm. you can make him uncomfortable. You can make him have to do something he's not preferable in doing, which he wants to stand there and throw. He doesn't want to run off a spot. He doesn't want to be Aaron Rodgers. He doesn't want to be Pat Mahomes. He wants to stand there and throw. And so make him get off a spot then, and that's where you can start getting capitalizing on whatever mistakes may be created. The third thing then is in being successful with that, you get the chance to put him in long down and distance situations. If you put him in long down situations, he's been sacked 11 times this year. That's once a game, give or take. Make that more than one and make him feel that you are around him, because this offense is predicated off of quarterback confidence and decision-making. Make him have doubt in his mind that what he's seeing, like I said, a couple times you know, Willie Harvey undercuts a route, bats it down, or maybe gets an interception. Then what he's seeing, he has a question of, but also he's not comfortable in the pocket, or he's not comfortable just catching and slinging and throwing.
Yeah.
And if you can make him uncomfortable because you put them in long down and distance situations, and you allowed, you know, Jaquan Bailey to make a pass rush move, or you've allowed Ray Lima to push a pocket right back up into his face, you've allowed those things to happen. Now you got a chance to make an uncomfortable quarterback make bad decisions. So it's a difficult offense to stop from a we're better athletes than you perspective, because they're just operating that they're smarter than you.
Yeah.
That they know where their matchups are. And I've never been in a meeting room with an offense that's like this, but I bet it's a lot of money ball, or I bet it's a lot of analytics of our receiver, when we run this package, is an effective play of 60-some%. Okay, their defense, when an opposing team runs this package, this defender is at X percent. We like putting our X percent against their Y percent. Let's find ways to get that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure that that's how this offense is based. It's very analytical of where can we get the matchup and then how can we create space from that matchup.
Well, and especially when you consider the fact that they're not out signing, you know, 4 and 5-star recruits. I mean, they're doing this with similar talent level, I would think, if you looked at the numbers, to what Iowa State does, you know, with just as far as the recruiting goes. Okay. So after all of that, you give Iowa State 3 weeks to prepare. You give Washington State 3 weeks to prepare. Who do you give the advantage to?
I would think Iowa State, and to take my cardinal color glasses off, I would think Iowa State, because the tendency of a quarterback is likely not going to change from 12 games to game 13.
Yeah, especially someone that's a fifth-year senior like right. Minshew is.
He's not going to reinvent what he likes to do.
Yeah.
So you're going to have a good idea, and you're just going to have to reverse analytic this thing of, okay, if they're looking at percentages, or if they're looking at they like to run this and throw to this out of this, then we need to be prepared for this and this and this, which gives the defensive guys a better chance to also catch on to that. So the coach doesn't just know what's going on. The players also know what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
And I also think that it's good. It's good for Iowa State Washington State. The advantage that Washington State would then have is that they can take a very deep dive into what they want to statistically know and find the weakness of that team. And, you know, is it just one guy? Is it one scheme? Is it one look that they don't defend well? Is, you know, maybe when there's receivers are 2x2, Iowa State defends it really well. And when it's a tight end on one side and three receivers in the other, they defend it really well. But then you put a receiver on that one side and then put the tight end in the trip side, then maybe they don't defend that really well. And it allows them to spread out and really look in depth at what matchups they can get to better attack what Iowa State's doing. And they can do that without having this is what we do, because they can just look at Iowa State and go, all right, over the course of their 12 games, they did this. Okay, let's write something up that we can expose that weakness. So there's an advantage to both sides, but I would think, I would think that Iowa State has a slightly better advantage because the quarterback is the focal point of this entire offense. This is an offense that is so centered around one person's success that it's not, it's not really, I don't think there's another offense that has that. Mm-hmm. Like Oklahoma, you know, it's Kyler Murray. They have two quarterbacks that won Heisman back to back. That offense is successful, but it's not specifically just because of the quarterback. It's because they can put their guys, this tight end, in a position to catch a pass from somebody that makes it okay. And so long as they can read a couple things, then they're going to be good. Where this one is, the quarterback has to analyze and deduce the entire defense and then make a snap accurate throw off of that deduction 50 times in a game. So this, like I said, I would think Iowa State, to answer the question, I think Iowa State has a slight advantage, but Washington State has the capacity to find good matchups for them over the course of these 3 weeks or whatever time it's taken to develop their game plan.
You want to hear a crazy stat?
Sure.
All right. So Washington State won 9 games last year and went 9-4. Luke Falk was their starting quarterback. Luke Falk finished his career number one all time in pass completions, pass attempts, pass completion percentage, passing yards, and passing touchdowns in the history of the Pac-12. They brought in a new quarterback and got better.
Yeah.
That's crazy. Mm-hmm. Like that just goes to show how, I mean, Minshew is, I think, probably more purely talented than what Luke Falk was, but just like how, yeah, it's just the mental side of all everything and just having that quarterback and having a guy who's got elite talent, like what Minshew kind of does, that can take you to a whole other level.
Well, that's why Case Keenum was so good.
Yeah.
I mean, that was a different offense. That was Art Briles' Houston offense. But it's still a guy that's not supremely talented. I mean, Case Keenum's a good quarterback. Obviously played in the NFL for, he's played in the NFL for now, what, 8 years? But he's good because he's smart. Mm-hmm. And that's where Washington State's quarterbacks and Washington State's offense exists, because their coach is smarter than you, or their coach is smarter than yours, and their quarterback is smarter than you. So you have to understand, like I said, you got to try and read their mind a little bit.
Yeah.
Where does he like to go? Then let him think that he likes to do that.
Yeah.
And then I think the position group that it's most incumbent upon to be successful in order to stop this offense is the linebackers. Because if you look at every quick play, where is that going to come from? It's not usually, and I don't know what the analytics are. I haven't seen full pages, but I'm going to guess very rarely are they far field throws. He's not going to be throwing from one hash all the way to the other side, the other sideline. They're going to be quick, accurate passes that are somewhere between like a visual range of the quarterback where he doesn't have to turn his head to see it. You know what I mean? Where like if you put your hands out to the side, it's like 15 degrees in front of 180. It's going to be within that field. So he's not going to have to turn a lot. And who is responsible for covering that space? Linebackers primarily. Yeah. Linebackers, nickelbacks, safeties that kind of pop up in there. But linebackers are going to be what will come underneath this throw, underneath these throws. So I think that is what is most in that position group, and understanding, like I said, understanding the game plan very thoroughly of where are his tendencies, what does he like, what does he not like, what does he want to do, and what can you make him think he wants to do. If the linebackers can understand that, Iowa State has a pretty good chance to be successful. But if the linebackers get picked apart, then that will be a very long game. I think Willie Harvey is going to have a very good game because he's a very smart football player. I think Marcel Spears has a chance to have a pretty good game himself because he's generally better in coverage than he is in the box. Mm-hmm. The position that I wonder about is that Mike linebacker position, which has primarily been Mike Rose and Orion Vance. I don't know if those guys are really good at understanding the other quarterback, because I think both of those guys like to have their nose up in the box, not necessarily back in quick game pass coverage.
Yeah. All right. So let's just talk about the process of going to a bowl game for a little bit. I mean, I don't know how well people understand that. I'm sure we talked about it last year, but it's just, well, not even, okay, leading up to it. So right now, I mean, I don't know how much they're practicing with finals week and stuff like that.
Finals week is probably light.
When do guys start even looking at Washington State? Are they doing it right now?
Right away. Okay. Yeah. And I think this staff has done a really good job of getting guys to understand what film study actually is. You know, we had guys that would do it, but it wasn't, I think it probably wasn't as culturally out there as it is culturally now, where this, I bet every guy is in there, or 99% of guys are in there. We had maybe 70% of guys in there. But anyway, right away, as soon as you know it's Washington State, and I don't even think that was a thing that Campbell said, hey, get in here and watch Washington State. It was guys, I wanted to know personally, what am I playing when we would get our bowl announcement? And so I would always try and watch it right away, whether it's on my phone in my room or whether it's like going into the facility and actually watching it there. But they're going to watch it right away. They're going to get to know the other side of the ball, because you've got 3 weeks, 4 weeks before you even consider actually playing. So you can know thy enemy very well, and you can know what he likes, what his tips are, what, you know, what's he good at, what's he not good at, and what should I be expecting when I see that. So I would always watch the linebackers, and I would most of the time just watch run box footage for me, because I wasn't that involved in the pass game, and if I was, it was blocking. So I was just going to watch the front seven for the most part. And I would always watch the linebackers and what they moved like, where if I was going to get a ball or if I was going to get a carry, and I knew that they like to cut back door, I would, generally speaking, probably keep my eyes more front side. Or if I knew that there are guys that just run super fast to the front side of the play, then I would know that I could cut it back. I could keep that in my mind to know that that was a thing.
Mm-hmm.
So I bet immediately on Sunday night, after they got that announcement that they're playing Washington State, I bet they were already watching film. And so what happens, I don't know exactly what the process is, but I would assume the next week, because that was dead week, right? Dead week, then this is finals?
Yeah, this is finals right
so
now.
So dead week was last week. I bet they practiced a couple times, but they weren't really, they might've been a couple full padded practices, but they were probably not grinder practices. It was kind of the let's get our legs underneath us practices.
Well, I know too, last year especially, I mean, Joel and Alan and David and like all those guys, they were not practicing at the beginning of bowl prep. I mean, there was a lot. I mean, they might have been going through some different drills and stuff like that.
They probably went through individual, but they didn't do any type of anything together.
But yeah, everything else was the young guys. And it's like, this was the opportunity for the young guys to just get in and just work out.
I was going to just get to that. So it probably wasn't that physical of a practice. It was the let's get our legs underneath us caveat, where you're going to have however many practices you're allowed, whether it's 10, 15, 8, I don't know what the number is. You're going to use every single one of them for your young guys to almost scrimmage each other every time that you possibly can. The guys that aren't going to play, that they've already, you know, they're going to redshirt, or you know that they're a backup's backup, but they're a sophomore. You know that those guys don't have a lot of live experience. Let's get your asses in here and see what you can do. This is your time, because when we were, you know, when we were playing, you get guys like Alexander Robinson. I think Alexander Robinson, a grand total of like 30 snaps in a scrimmage or even thud situation in the entire bowl prep period in 2009, 2011. He wasn't there in 2009. And so like grand total of like 30 in that year, because we know what he's going to do. Just don't hurt him in practice. That really, get your body healthy. We know what you're going to do. We know that you're successful. You know the game plan. So long as you can see what we're trying to do, you're good. And that's, I bet, the guys, anybody that even has a slight nick to the ankle, knee, shoulder, back, something. Anyone that has a slight nick, or a guy that they feel that is too valuable to risk.
Yeah.
Like a Brian Peavy. Brian Peavy has been playing in pain for a while, but so he's probably not playing much. So I guess it's not the best example, but maybe a guy like Ray Lima. Like a guy like Ray, you just got to know, like from Ray's perspective, he didn't get damaged during the season. He's just a season's worth of wear and tear. But he just has to know what the game plan is and stand there during practice to see from behind what we're trying to get you to do.
Right.
And then once you get that, you don't need to practice. But you're still going to take every possible minute, which is where I think I've told the story multiple times before. The time that I actually got my look with the ones was because A-Rob didn't take any snaps during bowl prep. And then somebody else got hurt, like even, you know, a little minor, like twisted an ankle. And then I got to run with the twos, and I did well against the twos. And then I got to run against the ones. Now, granted, it's ones asterisk, because like Jesse wasn't playing, or Jesse Smith wasn't playing, you know, guys like that. They weren't in because they were out, you know, protecting them too. But you get to run with against the ones, which puts you in a fair playing field to actually get good snaps.
Right.
So this is like I said, week one or during dead week, at maybe two or three practices. I don't know what the exact number is, but it's going to be light for the guys that have played and very, very, very heavy for the guys that haven't. And that was super fun. I always love that. Like I said, I got to roll with the ones.
So how much would a guy like Brock Purdy practice?
I would assume more than a guy like Hakeem Butler, but, and especially because he's a quarterback, he's going to throw in any scrimmage or thud situation, he doesn't get touched anyway.
Yeah.
He doesn't. He's got, I don't know what color they use, black, green, whatever.
Black, yeah.
So they, that jersey indicates that you don't even sort of contact this guy. He doesn't get touched. Don't touch him. If you touch him too hard, you get yelled at.
Mm-hmm.
So he's probably going to be playing more because they're installing a new game plan for you.
How hard is that? Okay, this is, I mean, obviously you did not play quarterback. How hard is it for a quarterback to do that to where he doesn't get hit for all this time and then the game comes and you get hit that first time and it's like,
oh, wow.
Oh, wow. This is what it feels like to get hit.
Huh. This is uncomfortable.
Or think about a guy like Brock Purdy where he's a true freshman, has really never been hit in the entire time that he's been in college. And then he gets put in a game and he gets hit for the first time. And it's like, oh, so that's how it, that's how it feels.
Ah, that was, that's harder than I thought. I don't know. I don't know. I can't answer that. I played running back.
Yeah.
And well, fullback. And
I didn't know if you
special
had
teams.
Any perspective on that. Like just how jarring that would be where you're like, you don't know really what it's like to get hit until all of a sudden you're in the middle of a game and you get hit and it's like, oh crap, that didn't feel very good.
I don't know. I don't, I might have told this story before. My first getting hit story in college. I don't know if I said this one or not. Probably
I've never gotten it.
Probably
I've never heard it, but
whatever. So I got invited to camp. Just this is a complete tangent. It's kind of art. I got invited to camp, but I was a walk-on. I was a preferred walk-on, so I got to make the 105. But obviously was paying to be there, which is ridiculous when you think about how horrible camp is that you're paying to go through this crap. Anyway, so I got to go to, I got to go to camp, and when we got padded up, we had to do a drill that we affectionately named the hamburger drill. And what that was, is that there was a equipment manager that pretended to be the quarterback, and you'd stand next to him like you're in the shotgun. And a linebacker stood where he was going to stand, which if you do the math, it's give or take 10 yards apart.
Mm-hmm.
He got to do whatever he wanted to try and get to that that equipment guy acting as a quarterback. Now, this is not a realistic explanation of how football works. Because there's no lineman around.
I was going to say, is there a lineman?
There's no lineman anywhere.
Okay.
So they have unlimited space that they can do this from. Second rule, we can't cut. So that's the reason why you cut block is if a guy is running full speed, he's a 235-pound linebacker and his shoulder is down. That's more or less like getting hit by like a dirt bike.
Yeah.
And the only way you can stop that is if their momentum's forward and you hit him in the knees, they do a front flip. And that's not fun, nor comfortable, nor effective. And so if a guy is a big bull rusher, like Jeremiah George always was, he ended up by the time he was senior being really good playing with his hands, but he was a big bull rush guy. Like he would never work a move. He would just run as hard as he can and hit you because he's stronger than you. And so we couldn't cut block them. There's also no linemen. So there is an unlimited amount of space and the knowledge that we can't stop them from running as fast as they want. And so we would just stand in front of there and hope to punch him and stop.
Yeah.
Great. Sometimes it worked. I got to the point where I was pretty good at it by the time I was a senior, but I had never blocked before. I was a high school running back in an I formation. I got the ball 35 times a game in high school. We threw it like 10 times a game. I don't know how to block. So we're doing this drill. I can't slow them down. I don't know how to block. And I go stand, you know, I take my 2-3 steps forward and I get down in what I think is a decent blocking stance. And Fred Guerin is a linebacker. Fred Guerin, I believe, was at the time 225, 230 pounds. He's a fifth-year senior. I don't know if he was. I think he was all conference. And he lifted me off the ground and threw me backwards, and I landed square on my back. That was that I got up to Coach Pope laughing at me, saying, son, you got to get your pads down. Like, oh, thanks. Really provide good coaching advice. And it was just sheer embarrassment. So that was my first real What's the point of this?
Yeah.
You have to be able to punch to stop somebody.
Okay.
That's kind of the point, I guess. That's the point of that drill. Linebackers have to work pass moves at some point, but it never turned out that way.
Well, and that's what I'm saying. I mean, if they are just running straight at you from 10 yards away, basically, mm-hmm. like all you have is to take... You just take your couple steps forward or whatever, that it seems pointless. It's just like, okay, you're just going to get basically step out there and get hit as hard as that linebacker wants to hit you.
It had its purpose. But by the time we got like a year or two into being there, we really didn't do it that much anymore. Because then in an equal sense, there was another drill so that pass protection drill, we call that pods, where like you get with a, you know, offense goes to defense somewhere. So we go to the pod section. So the pod section, that is a distinct advantage for the linebackers. We had another drill that was a distinct advantage for us. It was just a one-on-one pass route drill. And you come out of the backfield and you tell the quarterback, or the quarterback tells you, and this, you get, you know, a scout team quarterback. Ryan Gent was the guy that would always come down and do it with us. And you get scout team quarterback and you just tell him what route you're going to run, and you go run that route. There's nothing else on the field. There's no lineman you have to avoid coming out of the backfield. There's no pass rush. There's no time that you actually have to abide by. So if you're running for like 4 seconds and make a good move and then like make another good move off of that good move, you're never going to get the ball in that situation.
Yeah.
Ever. No quarterback is ever going to come back to an effectively run route in 4 seconds. The ball that you're going to get is an immediate blitz. You're a hot route. That's a reception. Or scramble drill, you have now made yourself available and the quarterback has busted the pocket and you actually get it. But there's nothing on the field, so we could run whatever the hell we wanted. That was our distinct advantage. And then it got to the point where they figured out how to stop that was they try and contact you at the line of scrimmage. And our adjustment to that was run a go route, which we ran like 6 times in 5 years ever. And it was just run by them and they go to contact you. You make one move and avoid them. They fully lunge behind you and it's like a wide ass open touchdown. There's so many stupid drills like that. But hey, got to look good against for the coaches making a linebacker look dumb.
I was going to say this, like these drills, it's like, I mean, I get that there's a point to them, but at the same time, they feel so unrealistic to what actually happens while you play football that you kind of just, I'd be out there and I'd be like, this is like the equivalent of one-on-one. Like in basketball, you know,
yeah.
If we went to practice and it's like, okay, we've got our big guys versus the point guards today in one-on-one, and this is what we're going to do to prepare you guys for the game.
Good luck.
Yeah. All right. Well, you want to talk about some national college football stuff when
sure.
we come back?
Sure.
We will do that. You're listening to Football and Random Things presented by Iowa Diamond on the Cycle Fanatic Podcast Network.
Hey guys, it's Williams here. On the podcast, on our radio shows, we talk a lot about point spreads, you know, all that stuff. To be honest, I'm not a big bettor, but I'm really just fascinated by that industry, and I want to recommend a service to you guys today if you're interested in that sort of thing. MyBookie.ag is the website. If you join right now, and if you give them our promo code, they will match your deposit dollar for dollar. This is a really good deal. Our promo code is 2427. Again, that promo code is 2427. They have live in-game, live betting. They're in the business for you fantasy guys out there. You can bet over under on fantasy points for players. There's all sorts of really cool things. MyBookie.ag. Again, that promo code is 2427. You play, you win, you get paid. MyBookie.ag. Hello, Fanatics. This is Chris Williams. There are few financial commitments you will make in your life that are more important than where to get your mortgage from. That's why I want to tell you about my friend Jason Larson at Gershman Mortgage in Ankeny. Here's a real review from a client on Facebook. Jason was amazing to work with. He kept in contact with us where we were at throughout the whole process. When we went to sign, he had coffee and donuts for us that morning. He was super kind and helpful, and we said we would refer him to anyone looking to buy a home. Now, that's just one review. Jason Larson, Gershman Mortgage in Ankeny, is an equal housing lender. Their NMLS number is 138063. Give them a call at 515-554-6177. Please tell him that Chris Williams and Cyclone Fanatics sent you. Hey, guys, it's Chris Williams. We're in the heart of football season now, and I got to tell you, I feel a lot better than I did a year ago, and I owe a lot of that to Dr. Kruger at the Ames Eye Clinic. Also, their Des Moines location they're called Des Moines Eye Care in Des Moines. Same guys, really great eye doctors. I never thought that I had eye problems. I don't really have problems seeing or anything like that, but I was suffering from chronic headaches. I mean, it was nonstop. I always had a headache. And I think a lot of it was because I stared at a screen all day. Dr. Kruger took a look at my eyes, took him about a half hour, and he knew exactly what was wrong. Prescribed me some glasses that now I use while I'm on my computer, while I'm working for you guys at Cyclone Fanatic all day. And man, has it made a difference. I'm even sleeping better. I challenge you, if you have a problem like this, any sort of eye problem, to contact our friends at Des Moines Eye Care and the Ames Eye Clinic. You can check out DesMoinesEyeCare.com or AmesEyeClinic.com. I would encourage you to do this and tell them that we sent you. Tell them thank you for supporting what we're doing here at Cyclone Fanatic.
Welcome back to Football and Random Things. All right, start with the Heisman. Saturday night, Kyler Murray.
Billy Sims.
You mentioned it before. Billy. Boomer!
Settle down, buddy. Settle down.
Good job, Coach Lincoln. All right. Were you surprised to see Kyler? I think that everybody, by the time the ceremony actually happened, was pretty confident that it was going to be him.
Well, the thing is, he didn't win. Was it the Walter Camp National Player of the Year? Is that what it was?
That is one. I don't know if he won or not.
But the past six Heisman Trophy winners had won that award, and Tua had actually won whatever the National Player of the Year was, not the Heisman. And so that actually made me get a little bit of a pause, like, maybe Tua actually is going to come away with it. But after watching the Georgia game and watching Kyler against Texas, that was the Heisman moment thing happened for Murray. It wasn't just one play, but it was in the biggest situation, he still played great.
Yeah.
And Tua in the biggest situation played like garbage.
Well, and the thing I think hurt Tua as well, and this is
that his backup came in and did better?
I was just going to say this, and this comes down to the what is the Heisman question, which is a whole other can of worms to open. But when he's been so good, he's been propped up all year long. Oh my God, Alabama finally has a quarterback. And it's like this made into this huge thing that he has like changed this offense. And then, like you said, Jalen Hurts comes in and basically does the same thing that Tua had been doing the entire year. That's when I look at it and I'm like, maybe Tua doesn't make that big of a difference because, newsflash, Alabama has lots of guys who are really good at football. And you don't have to be that great to make it look like you're really good because there's lots of other really good guys that are around you.
Yeah.
And if you can just get the ball to those guys, you're going to look pretty good. And that, to me, was like where you kind of sit back and you're like, okay, maybe he's not the Heisman Trophy winner.
Yeah.
But with Kyler, I mean, you could have the same conversation and say the same thing about him. Baker wins the Heisman last year, puts up stupid numbers. Kyler comes in this next year, puts up stupid numbers too, throwing to basically the same people. And you're like, okay, so then how can we say that Kyler Murray should win the Heisman then too?
I think Kyler Murray did more for himself to be an addition to the offense than Tua did as himself being addition to the offense.
Everybody got real worked up about the thing in the national championship game. And I think that that's where it comes from as much as anything. It's that one game where when he came in the game, everything flipped so drastically that then it was like, oh my God, he changed the entire team.
And then he did well.
Yeah.
Get me wrong. I honestly think he's a very good quarterback.
Oh yeah. He's a very good player. I'm not trying to say that. And it's just like Alabama probably would have been doing this to everybody anyway.
Yeah.
I mean, let's not forget the fact that Jalen Hurts lost two games in his entire college career as a starter. One of them was the national championship game. And then what was the other one? It was a
Iron Bowl.
Yeah, they lost the Iron Bowl. And it's like, and that's when, so when he got replaced, he's coming off the worst performance of his career in the Iron Bowl. There's probably a little unrest at that point, knowing that Tua is behind him and everybody thought that Tua was awesome, you know? And it's like, at that point, he comes out, Tua comes in, does awesome. Everybody's kind of like, yeah, screw Jalen Hurts. Like, this Tua kid's crazy. And he's really good. We got to roll with him. And then, it's just like a way overreaction to what would have probably happened regardless of who the starting quarterback was for Alabama this year.
And I didn't pay enough attention to Dwayne Haskins to get a good feel on if he was just, again, kind of the same thing of like Ohio State's quarterback. Okay, Ohio State's quarterback's done pretty well for himself for like 10 years now.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't get a good feel, but I really thought that it's just one of those things where you know, when you hear a song for the first time, I'm big, like just listening to a bunch of different types of music and, you know, little artists, big artists, whatever. And you hear a song and you're like, that song is going to be huge. And yeah. I don't know why. I just know that it's going to be huge. And then it is. I feel like the Heisman is the same thing. And people, you know, call it the it factor or whatever. But you can see that there's a discernible difference between the value they provide to their team and another player's value to their team. And that's why I thought when Christian McCaffrey didn't win it, I thought that was the biggest robbery of, I guess, who? What year was that? Derrick Henry, wasn't it?
Had to have been.
Yeah. I think it was Derrick Henry that won it. And I thought that was the biggest robbery because Derrick Henry was a good player, but he didn't add that much value to his team.
It's the same thing. It's the same conversation.
Yeah.
Where Alabama's always going to be good. Running back's always going to be good.
And Christian McCaffrey was Stanford.
Yeah.
And the only reason they were as good as they were was because he was as good as he was. And that was, I thought that was the biggest robbery of somebody winning and somebody not winning was that.
That has to be what year it was. Because then the other one was Lamar. He was a finalist when Lamar Jackson won too, right?
McCaffrey?
Yeah. Was he?
Was that?
I don't remember. But Lamar's the same thing. Where, I mean, he was that team.
Yeah.
You know? And then you take him off that team and look what happened 2 years later. Bobby Petrino gets fired.
Yeah, that team is
horrible.
Yeah, he's that good.
Yeah, he was just stupid. Like, stupid good.
That, to me, is the Heisman.
Yeah.
And so, and when you watch Kyler Murray, you get that feel. Where you're like, good Lord.
Yeah.
What do you do to this guy? And you just know that, you know, that he's standing and looking like he's going to pass. And then you go, he's good, and turn back, and he's 14 yards down the field running. You're like, where the hell did he just go? How did that happen? That was just, to me, it was just the thing that if he didn't win, it would have been because of the, you know, the Derrick Henry factor of he's the best player on the best team.
Well, and that's why I think about, you know, when you think about past Heisman winners, obviously there's been a lot of years where they got it right, but the ones where they... I think that when you look back at it, it's like, okay, we probably didn't get that one right. You think about Reggie Bush and Vince Young, where if you take Vince Young off that Texas team, do they win the national championship?
No.
Probably not. Right. You take Reggie Bush off USC, or are they still probably playing for the national championship?
Probably. Like, Lindell White's pretty good.
Lindell White was pretty good. Matt Leinart had won the Heisman literally the year before. Pretty good player. That, to me, is where it's just like, and that's where the conversation is. Is it the most outstanding player in the college football, or is it the most valuable player in college football? You know, if you take this guy off of his team, are they still as good as they would have been? Who is most drastic in that situation? And I think Kyler, of those three guys, Kyler is probably the one where it would have been most drastic. If you take that guy off his team, they're not as good as what they are.
Yeah. And that... I don't know that, and I don't know if that if the Heisman's clearly defined as to what they really want. Like,
it's supposed to be the most outstanding player in college football, which is, what does that mean?
And the most outstanding player, because you don't want to fault a guy like Derrick Henry. I mean, I'm not saying Derrick Henry's not a very good player. I think he's a very good player, but I think, like I said, in that year, I thought Christian McCaffrey made the most difference, and I thought he was just a better football player.
Yeah,
but again,
well, and that's
you also
probably why he's been very successful as a professional.
Right. And I think the thing with that you have to also kind of concern yourself with is, like, you can't also punish a guy for being on a really freaking good team.
Yeah.
Like, if you're the best player in the country, like, at the time, trying to think of a guy that got shafted by
I forgot Reggie Bush didn't win the Heisman, so I shouldn't have even said that.
Wink.
Redacted. Redacted won the Heisman in 2005.
No one won the Heisman in 2005. Guy like Deshaun Watson.
Mm-hmm.
But Deshaun Watson was probably the best player on... I would think he was the best player in the country. Who won it that year?
Wouldn't that have been Derrick Henry too? That would have been the same year? Or wait, that might have been the Lamar year.
That was the Lamar year.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it was just the two of them.
Right.
And so Deshaun Watson might have been the best player, but he also was on the best team. And then you look at Lamar Jackson, who was clearly, I mean, no question, one of the best players in the world at, you know, best players in the nation in college football.
He carried them to like a top 10 ranking and was, I mean, it was just him. Yeah.
But then, like, you look at this, you know, is Deshaun Watson was probably a better player. I mean, again, it's hard to tell, but yeah. because it's a lot of times apples to oranges, but you can't also fault the guy for just being on a really good team. So the Tua thing, I don't get that he provides a discernible difference to this team. He's just on a really good team, where a guy like Marcus Mariota, when he won, Marcus Mariota's Oregon team was really freaking good, but he also made a difference to make that really freaking good team even better. Mm-hmm. That was where that's kind of the thing that you look to me that it was different.
Well, and that's why, I mean, the one that always comes to me, and this is because I, at the time I was closest to it, is the 2009 one.
The Ndamukong Suh?
Yeah, where it was Mark Ingram and then Toby Gerhart and then Sue. I mean, Sue might have even actually finished fifth. I mean, Colt McCoy, like, he was up in there. It was that whole group of guys. Mm-hmm. But it was like, you take all of them. Mark Ingram, he played at Alabama. Like, that Alabama team was probably, they won the national championship. They were good. Mm-hmm. They were going to be good anyway, you know. That Texas team, Colt McCoy was a good quarterback. But their defense allowed, like, less than 10 points per game. Literally, like, less than 10 points per game. Mm-hmm. Nebraska had a bunch of dudes on that defense that played in the NFL. But if you take Sue off of that team, they're probably just another pretty good defense.
Well,
and that was legitimately a defense that took the team who finished second in the country to the wire, like when at the end of the season. And he put up stats similar to whole defensive lines that were playing for the national championship.
They also lost to Iowa State.
They did. But
so
they also only scored 7 points and held Iowa State to 9.
They also lost to Iowa State.
That same team, that defense, they gave up less than 10 points per game.
Yeah, and it's that again. So the most outstanding player, no lineman's ever going to win it.
No.
No tight end's ever going to win it. It's quarterbacks, running backs.
At this point, can a receiver even win?
Maybe. If a guy,
they'd have to do more than just catch passes.
Right.
I
if
think.
A guy is so clear, if a guy catches, like, has, you know, 2,100 receiving yards and like 24 touchdowns or something like that, at that point, you got to consider the fact that, yeah, he's earned his way.
At this point, it might as well just be a quarterback award, dude. To be completely honest, like what it, okay, Derrick Henry won in 2015. I don't know what, like 7 of the last 9 winners or something, yeah, like that is quarterbacks.
I think it's been Ingram and Henry.
And Henry are the only ones that haven't
because
been quarterbacks.
I thought McCaffrey should have won it, but also running back.
Yeah. I mean, you look at the voting from this year. Top three, the finalists are all quarterbacks. Fourth place, Will Greer, quarterback. Fifth place, Gardner Minshew, quarterback. Sixth place, McKenzie Milton, quarterback. I don't know who finished 7th and 8th. It's completely irrelevant. I think the top running back finished in 10th.
It was Etienne.
Okay, yeah. Etienne, so he was 7th.
7th.
Yeah. Yeah. And then Daryl Henderson was the nation's leading rusher at Memphis, and he finished 10th. And it's like, what's a running back got to do? Besides play for Alabama.
Play for Alabama.
To win the Heisman.
Yeah, if Christian McCaffrey can't win it, doing what he did.
Yeah. I don't think it's going to happen. It's a quarterback. Or Alabama's running back. It's basically it.
Or, well, even Leonard Fournette didn't.
No.
Get it.
I don't think he was even a finalist, if I remember correctly.
Nope.
And that dude was literally having people flip over his back.
Trying to not tackle him.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, God, just get out of the way.
Right, that guy was crazy.
Man. Still is.
Oh, yeah. Imagine if he would have played in an offense that was not created by Les Miles.
Kansas coach Les Miles.
Yeah, head coach at the University of Kansas. Puka got in trouble. You see that?
Jackass.
Yeah.
We had the same conversation. And I want to qualify this statement by saying it is there. I'm not going to say never, because like life can throw you a bunch of different curveballs. If a girlfriend of yours has your child at gunpoint, it's okay to hit that woman. Outside of like super extreme situations, there is no reason to ever hit a woman ever. But let's take this one step farther. At 18 years old in your life, what is so important that you are going to hit somebody for it, let alone hitting a woman? What in the hell is that important? Again, it's a level of stupid that is not approachable by any person. Then you go a level beyond that level of stupid by not just hitting a person, you're hitting a woman. And then another level of stupid beyond that is that the guaranteed the thing that it was for had to be completely insignificant.
Mm-hmm.
Stupid.
Yeah.
Stupid.
Do you, based on the current state of society, this is my stance. And the fact that Les Miles, having been the coach at Kansas for 2 weeks at this point, I'm going to guess that Puka Williams will never play a down of football again for Kansas. That is my guess.
Probably not.
Just because as a coach, as a new coach,
you got to set the bar.
You got to set the bar. Yeah. And it doesn't matter if it's the best player or not. If you're stupid enough to get yourself put into that situation to begin with, you got to look at that and be like, man, can't do it.
The only other applicable punishment would be like what they did with Joe Mixon, which was you're out the entire year and you can't even practice with the team. Go. If you want to transfer, fine. But if you don't, you're not allowed to even be a part of this team for an entire year.
Mm-hmm.
That'd be, I think, an equal, and it's going to burn a year of your eligibility.
Yeah.
I think that would be an okay punishment.
It depends on the circumstances right. of the situation, I would say. It's like the Kareem Hunt thing. Obviously, this has been hot in the conversations down in the Kansas City area, but it's the same deal where with Kareem Hunt, if you're even as good as that guy is and as good as his rookie season was, for him to have put himself into three different situations of similar circumstance, you just got to sit and wonder a little bit like, okay, man, why are you doing so many stupid things?
Hanging out with Tyreek Hill too much.
Yeah. The one thing I'll give Tyreek Hill is that Tyreek Hill's situation was tried in a court of law and he admitted guilt and stood for that punishment. Whereas Kareem Hunt lied to the team after never even having it haven't gone to court.
Yeah. I just think that
Mixon did the same thing. I mean, I think he was found guilty and he stood for what he had to do in the court of law. And you know what? Like, hey, okay, if you'll admit it, you'll say, I'm going to change and it doesn't happen again. That's one thing.
Yeah.
But
when you're a repeat offender.
Repeat offender and you're still not getting in trouble. And it's like, after the first one, it's like, man, I probably got lucky here. I shouldn't do this to myself again. Then to do it again or be in that situation again. And then when the team asks you about it, basically the team knew what had happened. Mm-hmm. And you say, no, that's not what happened. This is what happened. When it's on video, then the video comes out and then all of a sudden you act shocked like, oh my God, how did this happen? You know?
Yeah. Dumb.
Dumb.
Dumb people doing dumb things.
Dumb people doing dumb things. Quickly, the playoff matchups. You were wrong.
I was wrong.
Were you happy to be wrong?
I was happy to be wrong. And also I think the tone, I think we talked about it on the Instant Reaction podcast with Chris. The fact that Oklahoma's defense looked adequate is the only reason they got in over Ohio State. The only reason, I'm going to say. In that one game against Texas, that their defense looked like it could actually potentially stop someone.
Mm-hmm.
Because if that game was 65-62, Ohio State gets in, no question. Which it had the potential to be, because Oklahoma's defense is still not very good.
Yeah.
But they helped themselves out, because the only thing that was keeping them out was they had lost to Texas. So, okay, so you're going to beat Texas. Even if you beat Texas, like I said, but even if you beat them at the basketball score, 78-74, your defense is not good enough to be in the college football playoff. So now you can say, okay, they avenged their only loss and their defense doesn't look atrocious. They just don't look good. But Kyler Murray, that dude can win a game. So that gave him a shot. So we talked about it like right after it happened that I think the only way they actually did get in is by providing an adequate performance on defense against Texas in that Big 12 championship. Because had they not, Ohio State kicked Northwestern's ass. And they would, I mean, it was stepping stone to stepping stone to stepping stone. They were going to get in, but Oklahoma stopped the bleeding just enough.
Yeah.
I'm interested to see
you do listen to the Rob Mullins, who was ahead of the playoff committee. I mean, he basically says they considered Ohio State, but it wasn't that drastic. I think that they were pretty set on Oklahoma just because of how good Oklahoma's offense is.
Which I'm really interested to see how Alabama does against Kyler Murray. And I don't think it's going to be very good.
What I will say, I think that situation on Saturday night with who won the Heisman Trophy, I think that was a best case scenario for Alabama.
Yeah, that's true. But I also think that that's a guy that don't give a F what his accolades are. I think Kyler Murray, he knows he's already set for life. He put his name on a sheet of paper and got $4 million.
But you know what I mean? There's one guy that goes into that game now with the pressure of being the Heisman Trophy winner.
I really don't think he sees pressure, though.
But I think that I really believe that if you looked at the way Tua was reacting to that entire situation, I think he was almost relieved because now it's like, oh, look, now we've got a chip on our shoulder. The one program that why would they ever have a chip on their shoulder? It's like, man, our quarterback got slided for the Heisman.
Yeah. But I think what quarterbacks have beaten Alabama in the past 5 years?
Deshaun Watson,
quarterback that can throw but also run, create for himself.
Who played quarterback for Auburn last year when they won?
Stidham.
Yeah.
Quarterback that can throw but also run.
I mean, really, nobody even came close this year, so didn't matter.
Quarterback that can throw but also run. I mean, that Auburn put up points against them.
Georgia, I guess,
put up points against them, but again, Fromm can throw but also run. Mm-hmm. And a guy like Kyler Murray has the capacity to do that. Because he's not just a running quarterback. Because they eat those quarterbacks alive. Like a quarterback like Fitzgerald at Mississippi State. The dude's a good player. But he's just Colin Klein SEC version. He can't really throw. But a guy that can throw but also run has given Alabama fits in the past. Because they can't just sit in their base coverage like they like to do. They have to mix stuff up to rattle him. And Kyler Murray is really freaking good. So I know, granted, Tua's gonna throw for 500 yards against Oklahoma.
Mm-hmm.
But the game, I think, gets into the 30s and 40s because of how good Oklahoma's offense is against and with the capacity to actually be against Alabama.
Is it bad if I think that they're really, of those two games, really only one of them is actually that interesting?
I don't know anything about Notre Dame.
I was just going to say, of all of the teams that have made the college football playoff, I don't know if I've ever watched one less than I've watched Notre Dame. I don't think I've watched a single one of their games. Maybe one.
I think Clemson's pretty good.
Yeah.
I think if you know, they're obviously seeded higher, so they've got to be favored, I would assume, to beat Notre Dame. So if the natural matchup would be a Clemson or a Clemson Alabama rematch.
Yeah.
That would get, I think that's a fair shot.
Get it. Clemson Alabama 4.
Clemson Alabama 10. Clemson Alabama 10. But I think that's a fair shot. I don't know anything about Notre Dame. I know nothing about Notre Dame. So I can't even pretend to be. I'm just, you know, excited to watch. Oh, cool. Look, football.
Yeah. All right, man. We'll talk more next week. I think we're going to do some signing day excitement.
Signing with a CY. Signing day.
Do you work for the football program now? Are you working in public relations?
Do you get it?
I do get it. Thank you.
Do you get it?
I get it. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, thanks for...
Yep.
Well, that really certainly was a way to end the podcast.
Random things.
Thanks to Iowa Diamond for being the presenting sponsor of the podcast. Talk to you guys again next week. Peace.